evening, having arrived, we'll call the House Tax Committee to order when we have a quorum. So we'll start out with Representative Willsville, House File 215. So members, please take out 215. So Representative Wills moves House File 215. Representative Wills, two-year bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 215 is pretty straightforward. Currently, nonprofits such as 4-H clubs, youth organizations, is what we're focusing on here, have a tax exemption in a window of time of 5 days. So when they're at a county fair, selling milkshakes, whatever it might be, they have that tax exemption so that they can keep more of their profits to be able to repurpose and use for students to be able to participate in those programs who might not otherwise have the opportunity. And what we're looking to do in this bill is to expand that window from 5 days to 10 days to allow more county fairs to be included. There are several counties that fall outside that five-day window, and it includes Steele County, Martin County, Dakota County, Goodhue County, Maurer County, Benton County, Freeborn County, Olmsted County, Rice, Anoka, and Roseau. So we want to broaden the opportunity for students and also make it a little bit more fair across the state. We had this bill in the tax bill that passed bipartisanly last year and unfortunately was vetoed by the governor. So I'm hoping that since it was in our last tax bill that the chair and committee members would seek to include it in this year's tax bill. And I also have Rosemount City Council Member Jeff Wiesensell here to explain the bill further if you'd like.
I think we understand the bill, so can he be a resource?
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else wish to testify on behalf of the bill with concerns? Does the department wish to testify?
No, this time, Mr. Chair.
So good to have you back. I know you've been over in the Senate being working very hard, but we kind of I missed you.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Cummings.
I'm sorry. I can do it after this bill.
Let's do it after this bill. Okay. Okay. Any questions for members? Representative Detmer.
Yeah, Mr. Chair. Where on the bill does it list the counties?
Representative Wills?
I apologize, Representative Detmer. I had that as some information that I had dug up on my own. It's not included in the bill specifically. But if you look at county fairs across the state, each one runs a different length of time, and that was the summary that we've come up with, that those particular counties fell outside the five-day window.
So it doesn't include
Chair
all
Detmer?
Mr. Chair, Representative Wills, does it include all counties or just a select group?
Up to 10 days.
Wills?
So I apologize. If the fair were over 10 days, like the state fair, still doesn't qualify, then it wouldn't fall under this bill. So just 10 days or less.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Devin. I'll officially call the House Tax Committee to order as we do have a quorum. Representative Vice Chairman McDonald.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a question for Ms. Dalton. Ms. Dalton, my bill 605, House File 605, but off does the same thing as does it do the same thing as Representative Wills' bill?
Ms. Dalton?
Mr. Chair, Representative McDonald, I'm doing this from my memory, but I do believe this is one of the provisions in your other bill.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Carlson. Yes, I think it is as well. So, Representative Wills, you were not here because you gave birth to two beautiful babies, Shalom and, don't tell me, Shalom and,
Joe.
I forget. Oh, Solomon, King Solomon, yeah. So, anyway, beautiful twins. But I did have a bill that addresses this as well, so, hey, more meat for the kitchen is really a good thing, so good bill.
Any other questions for members?
Not a
okay,
time.
We do have a testifier. If you need to say something, that's fine, but we're just going to vote for this right now, unless you want to say something.
It's fine, go ahead.
Representative Wills moves House File 2015 be labeled for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, everyone. House File 2252. A Rarick bill. And members, again, we're going to try and accommodate members with their busy schedules. So please take out 2252. I'll move 2252. I see that there are no amendments, and so Representative Rourke, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. As many of you know, for about the last 2.5 years, I've been working quite hard trying to get the fireworks passed through, working with a lot of different groups, trying to figure out some ways to make it more palatable to folks. This is one of those ways. This is a tax piece that we are looking to dedicate 25% of the sales tax revenues from fireworks to our volunteer fire assistance grants and another 25% to the fire safety account. This kind of came about two different ways. In doing my studying and what other states have done, I found a couple other states have done stuff very similar to this. And also, when going around to my small towns with their volunteer fire departments, I found out just how difficult they were of a time they were having buying the equipment they need, getting the training they need. So looking at the volunteer fire assistance grants, and I spoke with Dave Urich, who administers that, you know, they get funding from the state and federal government anywhere from $300,000 to $550,000 a year, typically have about $2.5 million in requests every year. So this would be a way that we would really be able to help our small volunteer fire departments as well as our small cities that have to fund that. And then that's why we also looked at doing the fire safety account, because then that would be able to help the larger fire departments as well with equipment and training. So the way we have this written up, if we include this in the tax bill, the fireworks we sell today, the novelties, we would begin that process. Unfortunately, I see on the revenue note our estimates are still pending, so I don't know the exact numbers as to what this would be. If we pass the bill where we expand the use, then we would be capturing all of that as well. The number I do know from 2010, it was estimated that Minnesota was missing out somewhere between $4 and $5 million in sales taxes. So just my kind of rough thinking, if we're maybe bringing in somewhere in around $7 to $8 million a year in sales taxes from all fireworks, we expand it, we would be getting $1.5 to $2 million into each one of those accounts if we do this.
Okay. Did you have anyone that wishes to testify on behalf of your bill?
I do not.
Anyone with concerns? Of the department?
Not at this time.
Okay. I missed something. I apologize to members. I will. Yeah. We got into the next bill too quick here. The questions, questions for members?
Mr. Chair.
Chair Dabney.
Thank you. Question for the author. Around July 4th every year, I get contacted by veterans, combat vets, stressed by the use of fireworks, mostly ones that are currently illegal in the state that you're seeking to legalize. And they find that the wanton use of the fireworks is stressful for them, triggers difficult memories and the like. Have you considered, with your proposed expansion and the stress it will place on many combat veterans in the state, dedicating some of the sales tax to veteran services to help them seek the help they will need if your bill were to become law?
Representative,
Mr. Chair, Representative Dabney, I hadn't considered that, but that is another great idea. You know, we're trying to figure out the concerns that have been brought forward and how we can help with that. You know, one of the things I do know, I believe if we pass this, one of the benefits of passing it would be people wouldn't be afraid to speak to their neighbors either, and we would be able to, they would go speak to their neighbors and let them know it was coming so they wouldn't be surprised. So, but that is a great, great idea, and I will definitely look at that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Questions for members? Okay, with that, I will renew my motion that House File 2252 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Representative Ware. Representative Vogel, I will move House File 1897. Oh, before we do that, though, I rescind my motion to move the bill. Mr. Cummings. go ahead and sit down, folks. No, Griffin Vogel, go ahead and sit down. I think you'd be well pleased. You have an announcement? Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Mr. Chair and members, for the record, my name is Paul Cummings, and I'm the Tax Policy Manager for the Department of Revenue. Yesterday, I heard, Mr. Chair, that there was some conversation about the neglect that I may have given to this committee due to trying to bring various provisions around to various committees so that we could get assigned a tax bill. So, Mr. Chair, as an apology, I brought some cookies, and so I hope that that would make up for any neglect.
Mr. Cummings, let me be very clear. Apology accepted.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Vice Chair McDonald.
Just to note, you brought the people's favorite cookies, molasses.
Wow. Should be a state cookie, huh?
I think it should be, yeah.
Okay, I will move House File 1897, and Representative Vogel, is the A1 amendment yours?
Yes, it is, Mr. Chair.
Okay, I will move the H1897A1 amendment. Discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevailed. We now have House File 1897 amended before us. Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. I'm actually going to let the testifier speak to the bill because I know that there's a number of ones to hear, and what I would say might be redundant, so that way you can get the information as you need it and have the provider of any answers to questions that you might need.
Thank you. And before we start, is there anyone else in the audience which has signed the half of the bill or with concerns? The department? Thank you, Mr. Cummings. Okay, so to the bill, sir, please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
My name is Mark Nagel. I'm the Assistant City Administrator for the City of Elko New Market.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Just a couple of brief things. City of Elko New Market, by way of background, had some water quality issues here a couple of years ago, and we exceeded the MCL for radium. That led to a compliance agreement with the Minnesota Department of Health stipulating that the city had to construct a centralized water facility here by the end of last year, in December of 2016, and be in compliance by December of 2017. We did construct it, and it stands there. We had an open house back in September, and we are in compliance a little bit early. So the problem was we were unable to take advantage of possible water quality initiatives and grants and perhaps revenue enhancements there, and we were also unable to take the opportunity to for the sales tax exemption as well, too. So we did construct it. It turned out to be cost effective. It cleared up the radium and radon, and it also helped us complete our dissolved iron, which used to lead to a lot of rust-colored sediment. So it did work well, and what we're asking for is the opportunity to go back and be able to apply for that sales tax exemption. As the research shows, it would be it's an $8.6 million facility, about $3.6 million in construction materials, and be about $250,000 if we were to get it all.
Do the city limits go way out to the speedway? Is that in the city or is that in the township?
No, that's in the city.
That's in the city?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Now, Elko New Market, do the students there go to New Prague?
The high school? Chair. Actually, it's split. Half go to New Prague and the other half go to Lakeville.
Sorry, yes. Mm-hmm.
Lakeville, south or north?
Probably south.
It is south, yes, sir.
Okay, so New Prague Trojans, Lakeville south, Panthers or Cougars?
That would be the Cougars.
The Cougars, yeah. Cougars, okay. Now we've got that straightened up.
I don't think they have a band, though, that you were part of.
Questions for members? Pretty straightforward what we're looking at here. Okay, thank you. So I will move House File 1897 as amended to be later for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Representative Vogel, and to your witness.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee.
Thank you. Let's go to Representative McDonald, or do we have any non-members here? Is Jessica here? Okay, Representative McDonald will move. Vice Chair McDonald moves House File 1641 members, so if you pull 1641. And Representative McDonald, is that your DE1 amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair, it is.
Okay, so Representative McDonald moves the H1641 DE1 amendment. Any discussion? Hearing none, all favors say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. We now have House File 1641 as amended to your bill, Vice Chair McDonald.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, this is a very simple bill. What this bill will do will allow a sales tax exemption on the admission and parking to county fairs to be sales tax exempt, and then that money is put back into the fairs and other entity that rents out the fairgrounds to be used to improve the facilities and the grounds of the state fair. Some of these buildings are quite old and always need maintaining and fixing up, so that money then is used to maintain and fix up the state fair fairgrounds. Great little bill, and I will yield for questions, Mr. Chair.
Okay, first of all, is there anyone wish to testify on behalf of this bill other than the witness at the table? Anyone with concerns? The Department of Revenue?
Not at this time, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cummings. Okay, please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Okay, my name is Dennis Van Mollahem. I'm a Sidney County Fair and Arlington Fair Board member and a 2nd District Minnesota Federation of County Fairs Director representing South Central Minnesota County Fairs.
Welcome to the committee.
I'd like to thank your committee for allowing me to address you today concerning House File 1641, amended, concerning sales tax relief to the agriculture associations operating county fairs here in Minnesota. Our nonprofit organization set up in 1854 called Agriculture Associations, given special recognition in Minnesota Chapter 38 statutes to provide agriculture education as well as yearly fairs have taken place without interruption till this day. Part of this authority is directors shall be elected and serve unpaid, which we happily observe. All income is turned back to operating our annual fairs and grounds upkeep. Many of our grounds and buildings date back to the very beginning. The facilities are getting long in the tooth with small buildings, poor roofs, inferior lighting, little if any ventilation, narrow doors, and few windows. The advent of modern equipment has left facilities meant for hand labor and upkeep sorely inadequate. New advances in agriculture will not fit in the buildings. Insurance for the buildings and grounds have skyrocketed. Grandstands are outdated. Labor is growing out of sight. Our fair boards have taken on to doing much of the labor and upkeep due to financial restraints, but are falling behind. When we get done with our fairs each year, most of us are lucky to break even. We have taken to adding to our income with non-related projects to raise more money to keep even. Again, here we are non-paid, asking for even more time to do whatever is needed to keep our fairs up to date in an ever-increasing difficult time. Our treasures are often unpaid and are being asked to do more to borrow money and pay interest with depleted funds. Our members write grants, ask for donations, and dig into our own pockets, somehow put on a better fare again the next year.
Thank you very
Thank
much,
you.
Sir. Would you like to wrap it up? Oh, we have Representative Petersburg and then Grunhagen. Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just wanted to say, come down to the Steele County Fair. It's the largest free fair. County Fair in the state. How's that for a plug? But no, my question is
shameless.
It is shameless, absolutely. My question is, do you happen to know how many of the county fairs around are free and how many do charge admission?
An exact number I would not. I can tell you it probably is about half of the 95 that have free fairs and probably free parking. Many of the free fairs charge for parking on account of not having room for everybody.
Sure. Right. Yeah, thank you. And I know that they also get a lot of funding from the vendors and so forth as well. But thank you for the bill. Thank you for your presentation.
Representative Petersburg, I will vouch for the Steele County Fair. I used to live in Steele County for a couple of years, and that was quite an extravaganza. Rick from Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, just I wanted to thank Dennis for coming down. And Dennis is a perfect, I'll vouch for everything he said. And Dennis is a perfect example of a person who works tirelessly to make the community better, works tirelessly for the fair. And he's simply a great American and a great Minnesotan, and I'm proud to represent him. I'm not sure he votes for me, but I am proud to represent him.
Thank you.
Questions for members? Questions for members? With that, we're going to wrap it up. Vice Chair McDonald.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, members, so just to wrap it up real quickly, you know, the county fairs are the fabric of America, the cacophony of melting pot of Minnesota, and great food and fun and neighbors and from the city folks to meet the farm folks. Great organization, great times at your county fairs. For those of you, and I've heard from some on the committee that haven't been to the county fairs, make sure you get there this upcoming year. They're a wonderful place to meet, greet, and eat. So with that, I would ask for your permission or your support, Mr. Chair, of this great small little bill that will help county fairs. Thank you.
So with that, Vice Chair McDonald renews his motion 1641 as amended the later proposed, including the omnibus tax bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
The gentleman. Okay, we're going to start with Representative Jessup, 2175. He's on his way. He should be here shortly. So let's take out 2175. I will move 2175. I see that there are no amendments. Ms. Dalton, can you describe the bill, please?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2175 provides a sales tax exemption for material supplies and equipment used in a private redevelopment project at the former Twin Cities Army Ammunition Plant site. The exemption is for the period July 1, 2017 to December 31st, 2022. And like most of these, the tax is paid up front and the developer applies for the refund.
Okay, and the estimates are pending here. Okay, anyone wish to testify on behalf of the bill?
Mr. Chair, my name is...
Okay, anyone besides the gentleman at the table here? Anyone with concerns? The department? Thank you, Mr. Cummings. Please state your name. Who represents for the record, please, sir?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Blake Huffman. I'm a Ramsey County Commissioner, and I represent this area.
Welcome to committee, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll just be brief. This action we're asking for today is consistent with previous legislation that this committee and the legislature has approved for Duluth High School, Destination Medical Center, the Vikings Stadium, etc. It's located just 10 miles from here. When it's complete, it'll have 4,000 to 6,000 good-paying jobs, generating millions of dollars of tax revenue. Both the City of Arden Hills and the County of Ramsey have agreed not to use TIF financing, so any value will immediately come to the state and local tax entities. This exemption is time-limited to make sure that the developer has incentive to drive as quickly as possible, development as quickly as possible. I'll just pause there.
Okay. Thank you. Could you please state your name again? We didn't catch you.
Yep, fine. My name is Blake Huffman. I'm a Ramsey County Commissioner.
H-U-F-F-M-A-N.
H-U-F-F-M-A-N.
Okay, thank you. I apologize.
That's fine, Mr. Blake.
Okay, so questions for members. Chair Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the testifiers. What type of cleanup is going on with this site right now?
Thank you for asking that, Representative.
Mr. Huffman, Commissioner Huffman.
This once was the largest Superfund site in Minnesota. It is now cleaned up completely to residential standards, certified both by the MPCA as well as the PCA. We'll certify that later this year.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Chair Devin. Other questions? Okay, Representative Jessup, we'd like to wrap it up.
Thank you, Chair, for moving things along in my absence.
Okay, so I'll renew my motion. I'll file 2175, be later for possible inclusion in an omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Representative Jessup and Commissioner Huffman. Item next. Okay, I will move House File 2046, members, if you want to pull that one from your packet. And I have in, I will move the H204681 amendment discussion. Hearing none, all fair say aye.
Aye.
Against or with concerns? It's amended. The bill is amended. Okay. So we have House File 2046 as amended. Ms. Dalton, what does my bill do?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Michael is going to tell you what
Mr. Michael, what am I doing here?
Diane?
Mr. Chairman, what the bill does is to provide a non-refundable 20% tax credit for charitable donations of prepared food by businesses that are in, that essentially are restaurants. This, I think this bill was heard last session, so people perhaps remember the earlier version of it.
Yeah, this is a really good bill. Yeah, okay. Anyone wish to testify on behalf of the bill? With concerns? The department? Questions for members?
No.
I will renew my motion, House File Number 2046, as may be delivered for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Item next, 2143. Okay, this one. Okay, I'll move House File 2143. Members, okay, and this bill is also referred to as the Main Street Fairness Bill, and I believe it was in this. Was this in the bill last year as it is? No changes? Okay. Okay, so what 2143 is, the Davis Marquardt bill, is also known as the Main Street Fairness Bill. And this bill came, this idea came to me many years ago when a constituent of mine that owns Drury's Furniture, Mike Drury, was president of the Minnesota Retailers Association, and he invited me over to his store, which we buy a lot of stuff there anyways, but so I'm very familiar with the store. But he gave an example of some folks came in, looked at about $30,000 worth of furniture, a full bedroom set, a full dining room set, Thomasville. And when he followed up to see if they were interested, they said, well, they had gone on the internet and bought all that furniture from Thomasville, North Carolina, didn't pay a dime of sales tax on it. So now, by law, of course, they're supposed to pay what? They're supposed to pay use tax. I don't know a whole lot of folks, I can count on one hand, that I've ever heard of paying a use tax. So this says you have to pay the sales tax, and we really mean it, is what this bill does. So with that, is there anyone who wants to testify on behalf of the bill? Do you have anybody like to testify on behalf of the come on down. Is there anyone who like to testify with concerns on the bill?
This is concerns.
Oh, you have concerns?
Yeah.
Well, you can't testify. Okay. Let's start out with supporting, and then we'll go to concerns. Department?
Not at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Cummings. Those raisin cookies, are they still out there?
Oh, yeah.
They're gone? Well, I'll pick them up at the end of the meeting. We're moving right along here. Okay, state your name, who you represent for record, please, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Bruce Newsted with the Minnesota Retailers Association. Thank you for your bill today, Mr. Chair. As you mentioned, it was in last year's omnibus tax bill, so it's not a new topic for this particular committee. Just to add one nuance to it, the intention behind the bill is to tax a transaction that's going through a third-party portal. So think of a retailer that is selling a product on behalf of another retailer out of the state, but it is not this retailer's product. It's, they are the portal, so they transact the business. So it's designed to capture that specific tax and create physical nexus, which we have in the state right now, physical nexus on that particular transaction. So that's really the onus behind the bill. Generally, as you said, like Mr. Drury favors this type of approach. In fact, some of the retailers think that this is what we actually did in 2013 when we passed that bill. Of course, it's not uniform or universal. Liked among retailers, either are the retailers who have a portal that would prefer not to see those tax. They prefer to see a federal remedy to this. So absent the federal remedy, Mr. Chair, I think that's why you've continued to bring forward this bill.
Any questions for Mr. Newstead? Chair Carlson?
No, I was just going to make a comment. I'll wait.
Okay. Any questions for members? Mr. Newstead? Okay, anyone else in support of the bill? You're kind of representing all the retailers type of thing.
Sure.
So, okay, the folks would like to testify with concerns. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Hello, committee. My name is Colin Sheehan. I was born and raised and educated in Senate District 28, which is comprised of the two greatest house districts in the state of Minnesota. I work for Lockridge, Grindle, Mellon, and representing TechNet, which is a coalition that represents some of the country's leading technology companies. A representative could not be here today, so we will be handing out a letter stating their concerns.
And thank you for that.
Which I'll have a brief summary of here.
His comments are correct. Of course, they have to be in tax committee.
Here, some of the concerns in brief summary. One, TechNet believes this is an issue that Congress needs to address, not 50 different state legislatures. Two, the TechNet members have concerns about the feasibility of collecting and remitting sales tax, taxes that are typically the responsibility of the buyer or the seller of products. And three, the bill impacts businesses that have no physical presence in the state of Minnesota. So thank you for your time and consideration of TechNet's concerns.
Thank you very much, Mr. Sheehan. The next gentleman, please state your name, who you represent.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Carl Szabo. I am Senior Policy Counsel at NetChoice. I'm also an adjunct professor of law at the George Mason School of Law. I also have handouts. Unfortunately, Isaac will have to make a second trip around the bend here. I did want to discuss the significant concerns that we have with HF 2143. The internet is one of the last best hopes of Main Street stores that are being crushed by big box stores and economies of scale. The internet allows them to set up a storefront and reach new customers anywhere across the country. These include Main Street businesses like the Minnesota Honey Company in Southwest Minneapolis and Sunrise Bakery in Hibbing. At the same time, HF 2143 creates a disincentive for innovation and business development in Minnesota. Since today, 24 of the top 25 e-retailers already collect and remit sales tax for the state of Minnesota. This bill is much ado about very little. And when polling shows that 8 out of 10 of even New Yorkers consider this a new tax, and since any new tax collected only comes from the pocket of Minnesota residents, this bill represents all pain and no real gain. There's also the unconstitutionality of the bill, which will lead to a likely injunction. And as a point of reference, just last week, South Dakota Circuit Court found their similar tax grab unconstitutional. This is why no state has passed a law like this, and why in 2015, New York considered and rejected it. Often there are discussions of a level playing field. Well, SF 2143 is like making the Mall of America liable and responsible for all the sales taxes collected and remitted by every one of its stores and every one of its carts. So we ask that you protect Minnesota businesses, Minnesota Main Street, Minnesota from costly litigation, and Minnesotans from a new tax, and that you not move forward with HF 2143.
I'll put you down as a maybe. Ms. Dalton, in this... You would just say this is a new tax. Isn't this just collecting an existing tax that's been allowed to collect, Ms. Dalton?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that is always the big debate. As Chair David pointed out, use tax is owed on any taxable item brought into the state that sales tax has not been paid on. With a small de minimis exemption for some personal, but it's very hard to track. This bill actually addresses the agency issue. When does a retailer have nexus within the state because somebody is acting as an agent? What this bill does is says if you are being represented by a marketplace that has presence in the state, you also they are your agent and you have presence in the state and therefore must collect the sales tax.
Ms. Dalton, is there anything in here about some various court cases? Was there a time frame if the court rules a certain way on Quill, was it? Or?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this does have a delayed effective date. It won't be effective until July 1, 2020, unless the U.S. Supreme Court overturns or expands the duty to collect under Quill or Congress enacts a law authorizing the sales tax.
You said effective. That reminded me of I had a boss one time that told me that my pay raise would be effective when I was. So. Whatever. No, it wasn't my wife. No. Okay, George Mason Patriots, I believe, right?
Correct.
All right, go Patriots, what I say. Questions to the testifiers. Chair Anderson S.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure if Mr. Szabo or Mr. Sheehan have any data on this, but do you have any estimates, at least in the areas that you work in, and how big of a sales tax increase this would be for consumers?
Great question. Mr. Chair, may I respond, please? Representative Anderson, essentially the way to think about it is, and this is what the polling shows, that whether the tax is owed, let's be clear about that, it is a use tax. But what we're also creating is new tax liability on these marketplaces. So we're shifting the tax responsibility from the individual to remit it, and we're placing that burden right on the marketplace itself. A way to think about it would be, right now Minnesota doesn't tax clothing, and I suspect back to school time, North Dakota and South Dakota residents probably drive across the border, go to Mall America, buy a lot of clothes, and then drive back across the border. Those residents should remit those taxes. What this bill essentially does is shift the liability to the marketplace for being responsible to know the tax rules and rates of those states, and at the same time to make that collection. It's uncertain how much of a tax increase this will be because it depends on how it gets applied. One of the things that every marketplace could simply do is just move their physical presence out of the state and continue to sell into Minnesota and alleviate themselves of the responsibilities of this bill.
Chair Anderson, yes.
So, Mr. Chair and Mr. Zabel, so if I'm to understand this correctly then, if the Department of Revenue were to audit you and say, well, no, you didn't collect this properly, then the business is going to be charged. And we had a conversation about this yesterday in the
private letter ruling.
Yeah. Well, it gets to that issue. So they could potentially be on the hook for a lot. Are you anticipating that consumer prices of goods then would increase? Or how is there any conversations about that for both of you?
Mr. Zabel.
Of course, any cost on a business invariably gets pushed down to the consumer. Any new tax applied to a business invariably gets pushed down to the consumer. Representative Anderson, I think you bring up a really interesting point about demand letters from tax collectors, because one of the real challenges that a lot of people face, my mom actually sells her jewelry that she makes at her house online, is the idea of a tax collector sending you a demand letter. They don't actually need to do a full audit to send the demand letter. They'll come up with a number, and they'll say you owe $1 million. You owe $10,000, you owe $1,000. And unless that number is higher than the cost it takes to hire an attorney to travel and challenge that in court, those are going to be substantial costs. You may just end up paying it out of pocket. But invariably, and you bring up a really good point, those new costs to any business get pushed down to consumers. If we're trying to ostensibly lower taxes on businesses and not create new tax on businesses, I don't really see how this bill gets us there.
Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, now we've got a couple inconsistencies, Mr. Zabel. You said the tax is owed. Is that correct?
That is correct.
The tax is owed. So if the tax is owed, how is it a tax increase, a new tax, or a new cost?
May I?
Mr. Zabel, yes,
yeah.
Sir.
So the way that it's a new tax is you are shifting the tax liability, this bill is shifting the tax liability from the individual, in the case of a use tax, to the business. And that's how it is creating a new tax liability on the business.
So a new tax liability, not a new tax.
Correct. Now, with respect to whether individuals themselves see it as a new tax or not, I believe that sometimes people say the Internet is tax-free. So clearly there's a perception, and it's not. We all agree the use tax is owed. So clearly there's a perception amongst your constituents, amongst your voters, that this would constitute a new tax. We actually went out, did the polling. Actually, TechNet actually went out and did the polling and found that a majority of even New Yorkers, 8 out of 10, consider an approach like this to be a new tax. So whether we can sit here and talk about how it is or is not a tax that is owed by the individual or not, constituents and voters do view it as a new tax.
Okay. Representative Christensen.
Mr. Chair, I'd just like to make the clarification that Minnesotans are much smarter and better informed than New Yorkers.
That is stipulated. Yes. Let's go to Ms. Dalton a second here. Has a comment.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think it would help to clarify that a retailer like this gentleman's mother who is selling through a marketplace that has a physical presence on this would not be liable for collecting the tax. The marketplace, the internet marketplace, Amazon, Etsy, one of those would be required to collect on their behalf. And so those people are already in the state. They are already collecting it on their own sales. And this would just basically say, if you're acting as an agent for another retailer, you will collect on their behalf as well.
Representative Petersburg and Carlson. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to either one, and especially as opposed to TechNet, the companies that we're talking about here that are creating the portal and so forth are, in my opinion, or at least my feeling, is that all of them know the location of the purchase. Is that correct?
Mr. Sheehan? I don't know the exact answer to that, but I would assume in most cases, yes.
Representative Petersburg?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's kind of my understanding, too, and I know that oftentimes when I go online, it talks about, well, if you live within this state, you pay this tax, and if you live within that state, you pay this tax, et cetera. And with the computer technologies and software that we have that can track and do all of that, it seems to me that that would be a fairly simple, maybe not simple, but it is certainly within comprehension of that being done by computer as well, to be able to handle all of this without virtually no cost after the initial installation. So am I correct in that, or are you just saying you just don't want to have to deal with this?
Is that to Mr. Sheen or Mr.
Either one.
Mr. Szabo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Great question. It often comes up, hey, we sent a man to the moon, why can't we do X? And it's a good excuse for saying, go do this. We actually went out and did a study. We commissioned a study of the impact on small businesses, in particular of the cost. Getting the software is easy. Implementing the software is the hard part. As you all well know, you can go out and buy a Microsoft Office suite, very easy to buy, a lot harder to figure out exactly how to use Excel. When it comes to identifying exactly what the product is, everything has to be specifically categorized for the taxability, as definitions range wildly across the country. An example would be honey here in Minnesota. Now, Minnesota doesn't tax food, but in some states, honey is considered candy. In other states, it's considered food. In other states, it's considered somewhere in the middle. And unless you as the business who is using this marketplace properly categorize that item, then the taxes can vary wildly. And the person that's on the hook for that liability may be the marketplace, because the marketplace is the one responsible, but ultimately that cost for the marketplace gets pushed down to the business. If I were a marketplace, one of the contractual obligations I might have to be on my marketplace is you assume any liability for incorrect taxes. And therefore, ultimately, these costs are getting pushed down to business. The other challenge is knowing the exact days that there are sales tax holidays, knowing the local rules, there are tax abatement days. There are over 12,000 different taxable jurisdictions in the country today, and being able to perfectly match each one of those is incredibly challenging. Finally, and this will be my last point on this because I see you've got a follow-up, is that if a business collects too much taxes, they've now committed fraud. So a good example would be, because this ostensibly could apply to catalogs or other services, if I have a base rate for a state and then a city rate is somewhat higher, if I over-collect, if I collect that city rate for the whole state, I've now committed fraud, so there's increased liability. So it's unfortunately not as simple as there's just an app for that. If there were, this would be a much easier conversation.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Szabo, you also described every liability that every business in the state of Minnesota as well. And so what we're looking at is competitiveness and the fact that over the years, internet companies and so forth have been getting not only a free ride, but have been exempt from a lot of the parameters that local businesses have to deal with on a regular basis. And the decision to provide that services in this state also come with some responsibility to abide with our laws and regulations as well. So whereas I understand where you're coming from, the businesses in Minnesota are dealing with the same very issues, the same issue of fraud, collect too much. All the things that you said are also absolutely true. And so the question is, if you want to choose to do business through the internet here, But then it's time to also start become equitable and also its comparison with other regulations within the state that other businesses do. And I'll just leave it at that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Petersburg. Chair Cross.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'm quite supportive of this bill, and I was just, you told about the furniture store person. Is that the same one that came in and testified a couple of years ago?
Yes, Chair.
Yeah, and he talked about people shopping his store. But about that same time, I think it was probably after that testimony, I was contacted by a fellow that is in the technology business. He has a store where he sells computers, copiers, you know, that kind of thing. And he talked about the amount of time that he and his sales staff spend with customers that come in only to have them go out and purchase that material or those machines, I guess in that case, over the Internet. And why the reason I'm picking up on that was the comment from the table that it's being, those costs are being pushed down to consumers. Well, now, recalling that conversation that I had with that technology person and the time that he described that he often spends with customers, he has to cover that cost, either paying his employee to go over the needs of that customer or time that he would personally spend. I don't know how big his business was, but my point is that that's also a cost that those local business people are incurring, and I'll call it the time cost, working with customers. And then it's not that they lose them to the store across the street or down the road. They're losing them to the Internet, and that's very difficult for them to compete. So I've always argued on this issue that we should have a level playing field, and I don't agree that it's a tax increase either. We're just collecting, in my view, the taxes that are due.
Thank you, Chair Carlson. Chair Anderson S.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Dalton, how would this apply to something like Thumbtack, which is an app that connects you to services in the area? So if you needed to have gardening done, it lists all the potential gardeners. How would this impact that?
Ms. Dalton?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, I always love this committee because I get asked these questions. It's like, well, now I got to think about this on the fly. I don't believe there would be a major impact because essentially what they're doing is connecting you to local businesses. Those local businesses already have a presence in this state. They already must charge sales tax if their service or whatever is taxable.
But if the thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Dalton, what if it's a mix? Say you're in Stillwater, and so you're getting some businesses that would be part of the Thumbtack that are from Wisconsin and some from Minnesota. Then how would it apply?
Ms. Dalton?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, I am going to have to think about that and get back to you. I'm okay. Not entirely sure I could give an answer right off the top of my head.
Thank you.
Why not? Chair Anderson asked. Other questions from members? Okay, with that, I will renew my motion that House File 2143 be later for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, everyone, for the discussion, Mr. Sheehan, Mr. Zombo, and Mr. Newstead. Okay, item next, Representative Loeffler. Moves the minutes of March 15th, and I will apologize personally to Representative Schultz, but to keep things going here, we kind of need to do this. So, moves the minutes of March 15th, 2017. Any discussion? Hearing none, all favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Loeffler. Item next is 2328. This is a David's bill. That has to do with sales tax issues with a Super Bowl host committee. Is it sales tax exemption. So, Ms. Dalton, maybe you could just explain to the committee what we're doing here.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, these are the sales, the Super Bowl admissions sales tax provisions that were in the vetoed House File 848. The first section expands the sales tax exemption that currently exists in law for admissions, tickets and admissions to Super Bowl
to other Super Bowl-related events and to non-residential parking. And then Section 2 basically allows the Minnesota Sports Facility Authority to reimburse the NFL, its affiliates, and the Minnesota Super Bowl Host Committee for sales, state and local sales taxes paid on these things up to $1.6 million.
And members, this bill was, I would think, somebody correct me if I'm not stating this correctly, that Republican leadership, DFL leadership, and the governor's office had agreed to this. Ms. Dahl, well, you would, I believe that's the correct statement. But if that's not correct, please, somebody say something. Okay, anyone wish to testify on behalf of the bill with concerns? Department?
Not at this time, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Questions from members? Vice Chair McDonald?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Now, the Super Bowl has already stated they're going to be here in 2018. What happens if we if this doesn't get passed, Mr. Chair?
Ms. Dalton?
Ms. Dalton.
What are you going to do if it doesn't pass?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that would be correct. We would be charging this tax. However, I believe that this is reflecting some agreements that the Minnesota Sports Super Bowl Host Committee made with the NFL, and I'm not sure how that will impact those agreements.
Well, please state your name. Who you represent for the record, please, sir?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Dave Johnson. I'm an attorney at Fager Baker Daniels, and I represent the Super Bowl Committee, and with me is Maureen Bausch, who's with the Super Bowl Committee. I think the answer to that question is the Super Bowl Committee is a nonprofit fundraising organization, and this is a meaningful part of the budget that they're planning for events, so it would create a fundraising issue if it didn't pass, and a budgetary issue for the committee to deliver on its commitments.
Vice Chair McDonald?
Yeah, just we were talking about the Weeby and some folks out in Wright County that I represent there and in Delano. Just that the NFL, of course, it's a billion-dollar industry. The Super Bowl is going to bring in hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars to the state. I think it's projected around $4 or $6 million is the projected, but I heard on the news and we're speaking up. And just to give a tax exemption to a company industry that's going to bring that's going to make hundreds of millions is something to be questioned. Something. My first gut reaction would be, no, I would not be in favor of giving a sales tax exemption to an organization that's going to be bringing hundreds of millions of dollars into their coffers. But I'm open to hear the debate.
And I think to that point, Vice Chair McDonald, it will bring in hundreds of millions of dollars, and that's a good thing. But that doesn't necessarily help the host committee.
That is correct.
Mr. Johnson?
I mean, we are not the NFL. We're not any of the teams. We're basically a bunch of civic leaders who agreed to put together this organization to put on this event. And so these tax exemptions are designed for the public-facing events. They don't benefit the NFL owners, and they don't benefit the players. There's none of that in there. And I would just note that other states have committed, you know, $30, $35 million for us, and this is $2.5 million, of which there's a $900,000 state impact. The rest comes from the MSFA. So we've tried to be balanced, as was the letter that leadership and the governor signed when the bid was introduced, was to try and balance public and private interests.
Vice Chair McDonald.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Lemon, I do understand, and all cities do this that hold the NFL. I get that. You know, they have a pretty big, they have like that Thor hammer. I mean, that sucker is powerful. And when they hammer that down, states acquiesce. Is it custom for the committee to offer sales tax exemption without the legislature's approval, or was that a deal that was made before the host committee said, hey, we'll give you a sales tax exemption? The legislature already approved it, although it didn't get passed.
Well, Vice Chairman Dodd, I think it takes an act of the legislature, which we had moved forward last year, but for various reasons it didn't go through. So now we're back trying to reconstruct that. Is that fair to say?
Yes.
Vice Chair McDonald.
Okay, and then lastly, Mr. Chair, I know we're going to be pressed for time. In the overview through the House summary, it does say that it allows the Sports Facility Commission to reimburse the NFL and its affiliates, maybe the host committee is an affiliate, and the Super Bowl host committee, the sales tax. So it seems like everybody's going to get a little piece of the pie. Is that correct?
Mr. Johnson?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative McDonald. The MSFA, that's money that comes from the authority and from events at the stadium. So it's really, you know, some of those entities there working to reimburse for events related to putting on the event. So vendors come to town to do the build-out, to do some of the construction. They can get a rebate on some of that. Again, you know, Jerry Jones isn't getting a tax break that somebody else is paying for.
But just for the record, I'm a sales tax exemption kind of guy. Most all my bills were sales tax exemptions for nonprofit groups, 4-H, Lions Clubs, et cetera, et cetera. So I get it. I just need to voice the opinion from folks in my district that share the same concerns that I had. Thank you.
Vice Chairman McDonald, they could attach that, this provision to your bill.
Yeah. I'll second that motion.
Okay. Okay, Chair Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and clarification here. In exempting the Super Bowl and its affiliates, let's start with the language related events, and that doesn't seem to be defined in the bill. And I guess that's a concern about how broadly do we determine related events. If I host a party and on Super Bowl day, because we can't afford tickets, but if I host a party and buy a bunch of paper plates and cups and things like that that would normally be sales tax, that's related to the Super Bowl. Do I get a sales tax exemption?
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dabney, the intent of the bill is to limit it to those events that are named. The language could probably be tightened up a little bit, but the intent is to those are the community outward-facing events. So, you know, my reading of the statute, or at least what the intent is that you wouldn't be able to get that exemption, and if, you know, the owners decided to have a party, they shouldn't be able to get it either.
Mr. Chair?
Chair Dabney?
Mr. Johnson, I agree. I shouldn't be able to get it, but the language of the bill doesn't say that. The language of the bill, I think, is too broad, and staff may disagree, but when it says some of the language is just overly vague. But a second question, does this also exempt the local option sales tax in Minneapolis? My concern being that these nice people are inviting tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people to my city. My city relies on that local option sales tax revenue to, in part, pay for our police force. You're inviting hundreds of thousands of people. There's going to be at least management issues, public safety management issues. There's very real concerns about human trafficking, particularly of young girls. There's going to be a certain amount of drinking, I think, that goes on, I'm told. And there's going to be need for police public safety. And I guess my concern is if we're waiving the local option sales tax, are we pulling the very resources off the table that these folks are asking us to put in place to support their party?
And thank you, Chair Dabney. I believe if you look at page 2,
please,
section 2, certain reimbursement, and go down, if you would please, to line 2.4, and any local taxes administered by the Department of Revenue. So I think we're okay. Ms. Dalton, help me out here.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it does provide an exemption for local sales taxes on the events that are exempt under here, mm-hmm. for the things that are not exempt under here, but there's a reimbursement for the local taxes reimbursed as well. So the city would get the tax, and the sports facility authority would be reimbursing them for the tax paid, both the state and the local tax paid.
Chair Dabney. That resolves at least some concerns. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair Dabney. Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and this is always interesting. We say we want these events because they bring in such economic benefits, and then we give away all the economic benefits. While our local option sales tax in Minneapolis is dedicated till 2046 for these purposes, for paying for the stadium. I had a question about how it's drafted, and it talks about that the taxes eligible for reimbursement include the state sales tax and any local tax administered by the Department of Revenue. And we know that this is going to fill hotels outside of Minneapolis and St. Paul, Bloomington, elsewhere, and not all of those cities use the Department of Revenue to collect their sales tax. And so does this provide for an unequal treatment of cities with local option taxes depending upon how they choose to administer the sales tax?
Ms. Dalton?
I know, and she's so smart, she can catch up really fast. This bill provides that there's a reimbursement for state sales tax and any local tax administered by the Department of Revenue. But this is going to impact a variety of cities that have local option sales taxes, some of because they'll rent hotels and serve guests in other ways. And some of them use the state to administer, and some of them do it directly. And so will this provide for uneven treatment of similar cities?
Ms. Dalton?
Mr. Chair, Representative Wathler, I think you have found an issue. Minneapolis is collected, has their local sales tax collected by, their local lodging tax collected by the state. I believe, like Bloomington, does not. And so this could be an issue.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Chair, since...
Representative Wathler?
Since my city is contributing a third of the cost of the stadium and ongoing operating and maintenance, it feels like we should not be disadvantaged in handling the situation with this big event, and that we need to, if we're going to do anything, I would say that the city of Minneapolis should be exempt from this, and that, you know, Bloomington and other suburbs that have that do their own collection should. Have a different situation, but if at a minimum they should all be treated the same.
Well, Representative Loffer, I think your city is okay. I think some others we got to think about here. Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I did not think through, and Mr. Michael did point out the limit on local taxes collected by the state, that's on the reimbursement. So the local government is not affected at all. They're going to collect that lodging tax regardless of whether they're Minneapolis or Bloomington. It's just that the Sports Authority will only be refunding taxes on the Minneapolis lodging tax, not on the Bloomington lodging tax. But there is a limit of how much they can refund in total anyhow. So it's really, it shouldn't have any impact on either of the cities.
Okay. Thank you.
Good question. Thank you.
Chair Anderson S.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I support this bill, but please, I don't want to regret supporting it, so can you verify there's not going to be any free tickets given out to folks?
Chair Anderson S., I wasn't going there because I was to get the support from McDonald's. I was going to make an offer, but I no. Mr. Johnson.
Just for the record.
Just for the record.
There will be no free tickets being given out.
Thank you.
Well, lost McDonald. Chair Anderson S.? Okay. Chair Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just to the members, just 2 points. One, my friend Representative Loffler, the residents of Minneapolis did not pay for one-third of the cost of the stadium. That's not correct. Number two, I do think it's important for members to point out that as part of the offer to the NFL, as you know, part of the package of this, this is something that was signed off on by all legislative leaders on a bicameral, bipartisan basis. So earlier to your question, what would be the consequences of it? I think the consequences of us not passing this would be that when Minnesota comes in and makes an offer for a world-class, big-ticket event, that they're not going to be able to trust us, and that's probably a bigger issue than the substance of this bill. So I would just encourage members to demonstrate their support for this and make sure that those who are watching or concerned about it know that it can, when the state of Minnesota says something, it means that you can trust our promise. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Garofalo. Other comments or questions for members? Lead Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Maybe this has been covered, but what has been done in the past, that in the early 90s when we had the Super Bowl and, you know, we had the Final Four NCAA basketball tournament, I think there were tax exemptions given then also, but can anyone remember what was done?
Mr. Michael? Seems like yesterday, doesn't it?
Mr. Chairman, no, it doesn't. But Representative Marquardt, if you actually look at Section 1 of the bill, what this is doing is it's amending the provision that was enacted for the last Super Bowl that Minneapolis hosted, which I think basically what's happened is the NFL ask has gotten bigger as time has gone by and as the event has gotten bigger. When Minneapolis hosted it back in the early 90s, an exemption for the admissions to the event was sufficient to satisfy the Leviathan. Now, it's a bigger request that has to be met by the host communities. And I think all of the cities that have hosted this will tell you that, describe how it's escalated over time.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chair, Mr. Michael. And I, you know, this is a big event. I remember the day after the Patriots came back and beat the Falcons after being behind, 31-3 or whatever. I was still in shock, but I turned on the television that Monday morning, ESPN, and here they are handing off the Super Bowl to the officials of Minnesota. And then on ESPN, they started showing part of the film that they have, which was they didn't get through at all. But just that put Minneapolis, St. Paul, and the state of Minnesota on the map. And there's no doubt that there's going to be a lot more pluses than anything else from this event. And I wish the committee the best, because it is a great time to showcase. I'm hearing some of the things they're going to do. They're going to try to make this ice palace by the cap. I mean, there's all these things that these groups are looking to do that's going to involve actually all of Minnesota. Even find out on some of that where they're going to get the ice. They go around the spots in Minnesota to get the ice to do these type of thing. So, I mean, it looks, and I do hope we, you know, there's public safety concerns I know in the area that I hope can maybe be taken care of also, but this is really going to, I mean, this is a worldwide event, and when Minnesota can get that, we need to put our best face forward. So, I'm in support, Mr. Chair.
And Lead Marquardt, what year was that? The last Super Bowl?
Well, Mr. Chair, was it 91 or 92? I know it was one of Buffalo's defeats.
91.
Well, it was either Washington.
Well, you got it. You named her.
Was that the one?
Yeah, Redskins defeated the Bills.
And by the way, Mr. Chair, in sports, I have to correct something I said about Zoilo Brassais back when we were talking about.
His average was 256.
His average was 273 that year. I said 276. But the reason he got the MVP that year is he led the league in total bases, doubles, and triples. He had like 45 doubles and 12 triples and 308 total bases. I went back. But he only batted 273, which I think you were right, which is probably the lowest of all the MVPs. I think he had 19 home runs or something like that. Pretty good for a shortstop.
Did he have a gold glove that year?
I didn't see that. Yeah, I didn't. So I'd like to correct the record from that day.
Miss Windsor, sorry. Okay, with that, any further discussion from members' questions? If not, I will renew my motion that House File 2320 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you for the discussion.
Thank you.
Thank you for your help on the issue. Okay, item last. I will move. I will move House File 2340. I see no amendments. Okay, clarifies the taxable price of admission does not include separately stated non-taxable items. Ms. Dalton? What does House File 2340 do?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House File 2340 does three things. It clarifies that the taxable sale price for admission does not include the price of non-taxable amenities if those amenities can be refused. It excludes from the taxable price of admissions a suite license provided that the sale price of the admission excluding the license is higher than the highest priced general admission ticket closest to the speeder box, and it excludes from the taxable price of admission considerations paid for a stadium's builder license at the new Viking Stadium.
And I believe Ms. Dalton, wasn't this an 848, the conference report?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, yes, it was.
In this form?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, now I know what we're doing here. Okay, so anyone wish to testify on behalf of the bill, House File 2340, with concerns? Department?
Not at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Cummings. And welcome back, by the way. We did miss you, or I did. And Rubis did, too, so. Mr. Rubis. Excuse me. Oh. Okay, so a discussion for members. Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And as I see this is, well, we've talked about things in relationship to the Viking Stadium. As I see it, it's drafted so it would apply to any athletic facility. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct, Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, we've got a lot of these facilities around the state, and it seems to me that an ongoing tax break of over $6 million a biennium for people who can afford the most luxurious permanent seats is probably not a high priority for me. And I'd like to have a better understanding of why does streamline sales tax, or is this just sort of like this group kind of wants to not have to pay so much? I mean, what was the rationale? I don't recall the discussion from last year on this. And since they have to have access to their suite, even when there's not an event, it seems like that would create a operating nightmare for the stadium, whether it's the soccer stadium, the Twin Stadium, whatever, that anytime you want, you can go in there and have a party, I guess.
Yeah. And thank you for the question. And for committee members, this bill is, in my mind, basically clarification on the way we were doing things before. This basically gets us back pretty much to the way that these things were taxed previously. Then a few years ago, there was a department ruling that said, no, we're going to do it this way, so which was different from the way we've done it from day one. Well, I shouldn't say day one, for many years, I would say. And so this clarifies that we're going to do it the way we were doing it, not the new interpretation. Ms. Dalton, was that pretty close?
Mr. Chair, Representative Loeffler, yes, I think he got the gist of it. The real issue was, at one time, suite licenses were treated as essentially rental of real property. Then the department came out with a ruling that says, no, that's really part of taxable admission. This makes it clear that if we are going to exempt it as really a rental of real property, then there should be some real property rights, including being able to access the suite when there isn't a game going on. Because if you rent an apartment, you can go into your apartment anytime. It's not limited to, you know, just certain events. They also wanted to clarify that, you know, there had to be a ticket price that was at least as high or higher than a seat that didn't have a suite license. And so that's what, there's been some compromise in this language.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I still have concerns. You know, my city and our county and others are contributing to the ongoing operations and maintenance of these publicly financed facilities. And that means they have to have the someone and the security who's going to let someone in who wants to have, you know, an every Friday night party in their suite and rotate it amongst their employees or that sort of thing. I mean, it does seem like it gives them, for the benefit of not paying sales tax, it creates some potential operating issues that could exceed any value of some of those suites depending upon how they use that. And I have heard of corporations that let rotate use of those amongst employees, that sort of thing.
Okay. Ms. Dalton, you had a comment.
Mr. Chair, Representative Loeffler, yes, this is clearly going to be an economic decision on the part of the stadiums. They can either have their suite licenses exempt, or if the cost of allowing that type of behavior is too high, then the suite license is taxable.
Kirsten Blockner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It wasn't clear to me that that was a choice, so then we can deal with the governing board. Thank you.
Thank you, Kirsten Blockner. And let's be very clear here. Zorro Versailles in 1965 did not win a Golden Glove.
Okay.
He did not. Okay. Any other questions on House File 2340? I'll move that House File 2340 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Anything else for the good of the order? Thank you, members, for your work today. Good government all the time. We are adjourned.